Kingston Town can't win.
Bone Crusher and our Waverley Star, stride for stride.
Cometh the hour, cometh the legend, Winks has done it.
Can you please put your hands together for a four-time Cox Plate living legend, Glenn Boss, who, of course, won this great race on Mackaybe Diva in 2005, So You Think in 2009, Ocean Park in 2012, and Sir Dragonair in 2020. Glenn the Boss Man Bossy. Come here, mate. Take a seat, Glenn. Next up, it's Jimmy the Pumper Cassidy. His history as a jockey is well known. He won every major race we have, including the great race, the WS Cox Plate, on one of the best we've ever seen. Might and Power, Jimmy the Pumper Cassidy, ladies and gentlemen. And our third jockey is still going strong at 50 years young. He is an immortal when it comes to the jockeys. And of course, he has won two WS Cox Plate himself. And I speak of Damien Oliver, who won in 97 on Dane Ripper and on Northerly in 2001. Good to see you here, gents. Unbelievable that we've got the quality in the room. I was having a look through some stats before, and between the three of you, you've ridden in 41 Cox Plates, but remarkably, you've only ridden in the same Cox Plate on one occasion. Any idea when that would have been?
Would have been the year Ollie beat me on Dane Ripper.
No, we'll talk about that. Because I want to know what you said to him as he went through on the inside at 100 miles an hour. No, it was 2000 when Sunline won her second by about 8 lengths. You probably no reason to remember because you're about 20 lengths behind.
I think that was my first ever ride, actually.
Yeah, there you go. Unbelievable. Well, speaking of first ever rides, we're going to get to you in a moment, Bossy, but I want to talk to you, Pumper. Do you remember your very first ride? Because it was quite a while ago in the Cox Plate, and at 22 years of age, you had your first ride on a horse that started favourite in the WS Cox Plate.
Was it the three-year-old?
Yes, it was.
Drawn.
I
won the Caulfield Guineas on him, then he come here and...
1985.
85, yeah.
Unbelievable. You hit the front at the home turn. Do you
he
have?
Did.
Do you have
yeah,
great memories of that day?
I know I'm only little, but he was littler than me. And he's winning the Caulfield Guineas and then come here as a three-year-old, 48 and a half. I was probably a little bit overwhelmed that day, my first ride in the Cox Plate. I'd only been in Australia probably a year and a half. It was just magic to be one of the jockeys in the race, and as you say, he looked a big chance at one stage, but he wasn't quite good enough on the day.
Ollie, do you remember your first ride in a Cox Plate? Or was it on a famous horse? You two were in front at one stage, but not for long. Approaching the turn.
No, I can't remember what it was.
Stylish Century, back in 1991.
Oh, okay. There you go. Century, yeah. He was a very good horse. I probably got him a little bit late. I think he probably on about his fifth trainer by then, but he was a very good horse. Yeah, but I probably just got on him a bit late.
Between you, you've won 7 Cox Plates, which is just a remarkable feat. Unbelievable. And the man up the end's the greedy one. He's won 4, Glenn Boss. And it all started with the immortal, Mackaybe Diva. Do you remember the build-up to that year's Cox Plate? Here she is winning. It was unbelievable, the build-up, not just to the Cox Plate and then what was going to follow. Did you feel pressure the day she came here to the Valley in the Cox Plate?
Yes, Michael, that's good memories. Obviously, we put all our eggs in one basket when Lee said, you know, like she was bought in on a champion, but he said to make her a champion, there's only one race you got to win, and that's the Cox Plate. So we put all our eggs in one basket that year, and he got her to win first up. I got beaten here second up, and then she was unbeaten from that point onwards. Yeah, I never felt pressure like I'd never. I'm a really cool customer, and normally on these big moments, but I felt pressure like I've never felt pressure that day, because that was going to be my last ride on her, you know. And you know, you had a record crowd, and everyone turned up just to watch one moment. And that was to watch her win, and there was only one bloke that could stuff the whole thing up for everybody. And that was that lunatic on top, and I felt real pressure. But, you know, she was obviously a star. Like, you know, she's a proper champion, and she went out and put paid to them pretty quickly. And it was not one of my prettiest rides, I must admit, but that's the way I went out and rode her. I just wanted to make sure that she had clean air, which I give her plenty, and she was just way too good that day.
That year in the Cox Plate, they had all the masks. Yeah. So the whole crowd was wearing Mackaybe Diva masks in the colours. It was such a carnival-like atmosphere, so there would have been a lot of pressure on you. And then there was that iconic moment at about the 800 metres where I think there were about eight horses all lined up in a row, and there is that unbelievable photo where all of the other jockeys are hard at it and you almost haven't moved. What was going through your mind at that stage? We're looking at some of your other wins, which we'll get to in a moment, but here is this unbelievable moment where the field fans coming past the school.
Yeah, you don't want to know what's going through my moment at this point. As a jockey, you know, you have these scenarios when you do your form. You have little moments where you think this is how it's going to work out, and you'll have many scenarios that you try and go through so that when the event comes and something does pop up, you know, you've already gone through that. I'd never had this one go through my mind when we went, you know, there was 10 horses in a line. It looked like a straight race down Flemington and we're at the 600 metre mark. But I thought, holy Jesus, what's going on here? And in that very same split-second moment, I thought, well, they've all just gone too soon, these idiots. They've all gone way too soon, all exposed themselves, and there was only going to be one person left standing, and that was the great mare. And yeah, and she put Pedro on that day, and that was my first Cox Plate, Michael. You know, it was the race I wanted. It was the race I wanted to win more than any other race in my life. It was. I grew up wanting to win the Cox Plate before a Melbourne Cup, to be very honest. And so that was great to get that one out of the way.
You've had a couple of wins on horses that are just champions. We're not allowed to say that word unless it is a true meaning of a champion. And to win one on Maccabi Diva, and then to win on So You Think, who at that time we didn't realise how good he was. He was still a maiden and just his fifth start, and maybe there was pressure of a different kind, because did you disobey the great JB Cummings on the ride on So You Think that year?
Yeah, well, that wasn't through design. It was just through my inside knowledge of the colt. Listen, we knew that he was going to be something special. When Bart rang me the week before and said, "Bossy, I think this could be the best horse I've ever had." And you go, "Are you serious, Bart?" And he says, "Oh, Bossy, I think this could be possibly the best horse I've ever put a bridle on, and I want you to ride him in the Cox Plate." It's like, you had me at hello. Like, and I got the opportunity to ride him once just before the Cox Plate, and I kind of knew what I had underneath me. He was a really robust, intelligent colt who wanted to have his way, and you wouldn't get into an arm wrestle with him, because no one wins in an arm wrestle with these colts. And so Bart said, my final instruction said, don't lead. Yeah, good on you, Bart. And but the colt had other ideas, and I just let him, like Jimmy and Ollie will tell you, you know, you just feel the horse and you go with them and let them have their way, and then you ask them for permission to come back, and then they do that, and then all of a sudden they give you a good ride. And well, he broke 10 between the 400 and the 200. He broke 10 seconds. An immature cut, and he was going sideways at that point. It was ridiculous how fast he was, and that was, I got off him and I said, this is the birth of the champion, and he went on to win 10 more Group 1s, or 9 more Group 1s, and was voted the best horse in the world, I think, on 2 years running, I think, Michael?
Yeah. And he was only 2 when he won that.
He was not even 3 years old when he won that race. I believe if he stayed in Australia, he would have won 4 Cox Plates if he stayed in Australia. He was a phenomenal racehorse.
What did Bart say when you got off him that day?
He was crying, you know. Bart was, it was very emotional. I'd never seen Bart like that before. You know, it really affected him that day. He knew he had this amazing colt, and, you know, and Bart's, God, we know what Bart is. He was visibly shaking and crying after the event, and I give him a big kiss and a hug. I could see what that moment really meant to him. He was obviously getting later in his career, but to find this magic colt, that at that stage of his career and realizing what he'd done with that colt, you know, he kind of moulded him and moulded him and moulded him. He got beaten in the Caulfield Guineas, but he knew he could win a Cox Plate. I mean, that's just the magic of Bart Cummings, and so it meant a lot to him.
I think you're on Who Got You that year, Ollie. He was the favourite behind So You Think. Do you remember seeing the black flash up front thinking, what's going on here?
I did, actually, and I thought, it's going to be hard to beat with 48 kilos on his back rolling along out there, and I had to make a bit of a long run on Hoobie, and he was probably a better miler than 2,000 metre horse. And when I had to make a long run on Hoobie, and Hoobie, I think, was probably had a little bit past his peak. He was starting to feel his legs a little bit then. I had to make a long run on him, and I was never going to get near him.
Have you seen a better celebrator? Is it Pumper or Bossy who's the best celebrator?
Oh, Bossy by the length of Australia.
No contest with anyone.
What's he like when he comes back into the jockey's room after winning a major?
Oh, yeah, you know he's won one. He's never quiet, but, you know, Bossy, he's a great celebrator and, you know, he loves a big occasion and, you know, he enjoys it and you can't knock anyone for that because that's what we all do it for.
That's why cream comes to the top, yep. Michael.
Did you used to come into the jockey room with a ring-a-ding-ding after a big win?
Oh, yeah, I had plenty of that. I was going a bit ordinary and that's how I started the ring-a-ding-ding. Got things back on track, but it was great. It creates atmosphere. Good for me. The public love it. Some people think I'm an idiot, but the others go with it and enjoy it. That's racing.
Speaking of comebacks, it was probably almost what it was for you, Bossy, because you'd been overseas, and then when you came back and you won your fourth Cox Plate on Sir Dragon A, it almost came out of nowhere. It's hard to ever top the feeling of riding a Cox Plate winner on a champion like Maccabi Diva or So You Think, but how special was it winning the fourth on Sir Dragon A?
Yeah, it was quite unexpected, to be honest. I'd come back from overseas and I was a bit lost and all of a sudden I had started things starting to roll for me. And I didn't have a ride in the Cox Plate that year. And Huey Bowman was down to ride Sir Dragon A and he got suspended. And Huey's credit, we got on with he's one of my closest friends. The owners asked Huey, who's the man for the job? And Huey straight away said, well, there's only one bloke you want to put on the horse. It was me. And I didn't know. But lucky enough, I got the call up. And I did the form on this horse, on this colt. And I promise you, I was so confident he could win. I just knew that he'd been badly ridden in Europe. But he had the weapons. He had the arsenal to... Like, you need a really proper horse to win at Cox Plate. You need a near bordering on a champion. And I just knew this colt had the right weapons to win a Cox Plate if I just rode him the right way. And when I seen him coming in the enclosure, I said, oh, my God, I can't win. He looked horrible. He had his head on the ground. He looked hairy. And I thought, oh, my God, what have I got here?
Is that Kieran or Sir Dragoner?
That was... Yeah, well... All right. Kieran, to his credit, said, don't look at him when he comes in. And, well, that's the first thing you do. But by the time I got to the barriers, I thought, wow, this can win. He gave me a really incredible feel. But in the weirdest situation, like these boys know, I'm a lunatic, and like you know, to win on say, you know, in front of a record crowd in front with Maccabi, and then I come here and there's nobody. You know, honestly, it's the weirdest sensation. You stand in the barriers, and Ollie and Jimmy will tell you, as soon as the last horse goes in the barriers, because of Moonee Valley, the way it's structured. You can almost feel like people are sitting right beside you. The noise, you don't hear it, you feel it. It's incredible. So you're waiting, the last horse goes in and you go, oh boy, strap yourself in, it's going to be fun. Nothing. You're sitting there, it's like a barrier trial. And I went past the line and screamed out. My voice hit the grandstand and come back and hit me. I went, what did I just, that was, I didn't know what to do with my hands and what do I do with myself? I come back in, I was it was weird, you know, and I'll never get to ride that, do that again, but it was just, I got to experience both ends of the spectrum. It was completely out of control.
That was the first carnival where there were no crowds, and Ollie, I know you were on Russian Camelot, who was very close. He was gallant in that race, wasn't he? But that's when the world realised how much you scream in races as well, because there were no crowds.
I was screaming for different reasons than Bossy. As Bossy said, it was weird. We were sitting... Jockeys were separated. We were sitting down in the bar. Yeah. It looks over the track, and it was really weird that, you know, whole year or so that we had with no crowds. And people found out a few trade secrets about my screaming in the run to the finish.
Well, the good news is we don't need to listen to you screaming anymore because the crowds will be back this carnival. Yeah. Can't wait to see it here on Ladbrokes Cox Plate Day. Hey, Pumper, I want you to take me back to the year before you won the Cox Plate, and it was a D. Oliver ride on Dane Ripper. I'm going to talk to Ollie about Dane Ripper in a moment, but you were on Falante.
Falante, yeah.
Who was, I think, maybe even odds on favourite on the day.
Yeah, I think he was 11 to 8 favourite, I think.
And that was the year you just won the Caulfield Cup by 7 lengths on Might and Power. You're on the raging favourite in the Melbourne Cup, and you were looking for the middle peg of what was an unbelievable trilogy of the major races. Did you think on the turn you were home on Falante?
Well, I didn't listen to Jack when I won the Caulfield Cup because I went out and led. And the last thing he said to me in the mounting yard was, don't go anywhere near the fence. And I think it was the only time in 38 years that I actually listened to a trainer. And I got beat. Ollie got up inside me and he can scream, don't worry, because I could hear him coming 600 metres out. So, yeah, look, that was... they're always disappointing days when you track into the race and you think you're home. But it's the same old saying, you're never home until you get to the line. And when you ride against guys like these, you can't make mistakes. And that was a mistake that Jack made, not me that day. And the only mistake I made was listen to him.
Philando, the leader, Dane Ripper getting up on the inside. Dane Ripper, the mare, a boil over in the Cox Plate. Dane Ripper wins nearly a length on the line.
Because I didn't listen to many trainers very often. When you're out there and you're travelling well, you've got to make decisions quick. And I think had I stayed on the fence that day, I might have got home. But then the great man probably went round me and got up and beat me on the line anyway. But look, it's just great to be part of it. He run terrific, that horse. His only minus was probably... he wasn't a real gun 2,000-metre horse, 2,040 here in the Cox Plate. But, look, I give him a reasonable ride. He had every hope, and better jock meet me on the day.
Well, we'll get the vision of Dane Ripper's win in 97 up, because, Ollie, I want to talk to you about that, because you're a bit stiff, Pumper, because she wasn't in the race on the Tuesday. And it was Joe Agresta, wasn't it, that said to Bart after track work with the stars on the Tuesday, I think you've got this horse in the wrong race. Is that how it unfolded?
That's right, yeah. And I can assure you, Jimmy, I wouldn't have been screaming at the 600 because you wouldn't have let me through if you knew I was coming through.
True.
But, you're right. Joe Agresta said to Bart, she was in the Mile Mares race here on Cox Plate Day, and Joe said, Bart, I think you got her in the wrong race. She's flying. And Bart said, we can change that. We'll just put her in the Cox Plate. That was Tuesday morning here after breakfast with the stars. I didn't have a ride, as you saw. It was a pretty small field. I think it was only 8 or 10 runners, and I picked up the ride, and I did the form on the mare. I hadn't ridden her before, and she hadn't raced past a mile. She'd won the Stradbroke earlier that year with 50 kilos, I think, on with Chris Muntz on, and I thought to myself, geez, I'm going to have to ride this well. She hadn't raced past a mile to win a Cox Plate, but I had the luxury. She was the outsider of the field, and there was no pressure on me like Jimmy had on him riding the short price favourite. So I could be a bit, not blasé, but a little bit more conservative and take a little bit more risk perhaps than what you would on a short price favourite in a race like that. So I remember there was a pretty slow pace in the race, and because of that, the pressure built up a bit earlier in the race. I think they got around the bottom turn. They started to take off. And because I had to ride her to get the strong 2,000 metres, I could be a little bit more patient and let the pressure go. And then as I came around to the turn, I was sort of, as you could see, I had a fair bit of horse underneath me. And fortunately, the inside opened up and I was able to squeak through and get the win.
She was 40-1 that day, and I mean, there's great scenes post the finish of the race where you almost looked like you were in shock. You couldn't believe you'd won the Cox Plate that day.
Yeah, well, you usually are when you win on a 40-1 pop, especially in a race like that. You're not expecting it, but I was, you know, it was my first Cox Plate. I was elated, and you know, it was a bit of a surprise, and to win it, I was beside myself. Yeah.
Hey, Pumper, you didn't have to wait long because you came back with the big horse, Might and Power, 12 months later. But again, things didn't go to plan that year, did it? You won your way in the Yolumba because he wasn't really travelling like the Might and Power of 12 months ago. So did you feel pressure heading into that Cox Plate?
After the Yolumba, not so much, because he'd sort of been going a little bit ordinary. I give him a couple of ordinary rides in Sydney, but once he came to Melbourne, Alan Denham rang me and he said, he's on song, the big boy. And I never rode him work, but I went and watched him work at Caulfield prior to the Yolumba, and I think it was a bit of a match race, Might and Power and Tycoon Lil, Billy Idol, and he won good that day, and he gave me a lot of confidence that he was back. Took me another furlong to pull him up after the line. So when I come here to the Valley, I seen Brett Grant gallop him, and he come off the track that day, would have run through a brick wall. So that day I'd won the Vase early in the day on Mossman. I think I led on him and he ran a course record, and I thought to myself, if Might and Power runs a course record here today, they won't beat him. And it was a match race. He didn't jump that well, and I had to dig him going to the first corner. which you don't like to do in a race like the Cox Plate. And Shane Dye was talking garbage, saying he was unbeatable and he was going to do this and do that. And I pulled his pants down going to the winning post the first time and shoved him out of the way, dictated the Cox Plate, and it was pumps. Said, thanks for coming, Billy.
Does he... much chatter between you and Shane Dye during the race, or...?
Ah, you can't shut him up. He's like a monkey. You feed him peanuts, you can't shut him up.
We're just watching his big Cups double the year before, but I love Brian Martin's call in the Cox Plate where he said, the earth begins to rumble.
Yeah,
and
well, the thing I loved about it was I said to Billy, Shane Dye, because he was mouthing off, I said, Billy, if I dictate the Cox Plate, I win, mate. You run a good second or third, or maybe not a runner. Oh. And I listened to the call after, and I think he said, Cassidy dictates the Cox Plate with 1,000 to go. Well, he nearly broke a minute his last 1,000. So by the time Shane looked in the mirror and done his hair, I was off and gone.
What did it mean for you to win a Cox Plate?
Sorry?
What did it mean for you to get that Cox Plate?
The ultimate. I'd seen so many Cox Plates run. A great Kiwi jockey, Brent Thompson, he was sort of a jockey I idolised growing up, and watched Brent a lot when he came here, and then his wins on Dulcify. And
is you pushing Billy Idol out of the way too, by the way?
Yeah, get out of the way, Billy, you mug. And I done that, and I got to the lead. They went. It was a big tempo that day, so it was a courageous win because I put middle to the pedal, sort of 1,200 out, and then up tempo at the 1,000. And that's why champions win Cox Plates, because you can do things that you don't normally do in other races. And, like, I just made them chase, and this big fella gets them off the bit. They do a lot of chasing.
Tycoon Lil can't go on. Might and Power in front. He's going to get it. The earth starts to rumble. Might and Power takes the Cox Plate a length and a half, Northern Drake.
And that day, I remember the post-race presentation, Jack Denham was pretty emotional, and you didn't see Jack very emotional, and he didn't really speak in the media. He made a little speech that day. It meant a lot to him. What did he say to you when you
came
back? It
did mean a lot to Jack. Like, he had, I think Mick rode Falante the year before. I run second on him, and then I run second on him the year after, and then obviously he had Might and Power a couple of years later come back. Look, Jack was a man of few words. He was emotional that day, and after leading in the Caulfield Cup and winning, against instructions not to lead and then come here, it was quite nice that he didn't ask me what I was going to do.
This Cox Plate's had so many unbelievable memories. We'll talk about the Bone Crusher A Waverley Star in a moment. I'll get the guys to cue it up. But before that, I want to go to 1992, because I think everyone in this room will remember the 1992 Cox Plate, arguably the greatest field we've ever seen, and without doubt the greatest controversy in the race. And Pumper, you and Ollie, you both rode in this race. You're on Rough Habit out the back there, Jim. Can you recall this race vividly?
Superimposed, peeling to the outside with Betalution up. There's a fall. There's a fall in the Cox Plate. And Naturalism's lost the rider.
Yeah, look, as they fell there, I changed my silks when I come back in, because I just, I run up, I think Naturalism fell on that.
And Palace Rain,
yeah, and he sort of come up in front of me, and because it was a firm track, Ruffy sort of took a little bit to get going. I just started to edge him along, and all of a sudden Naturalism went. He come up in front of me, and it was a remarkable I stayed up, because Rough Habit just run straight into Naturalism and actually hit him that hard. I've never seen it before. He hit him that hard when Naturalism come up. He split his breastplate, which holds the saddle on, obviously, and that's how hard he hit him. But one of the great Cox Plates. You don't see many horses line up in the great races as that race was. So even though I didn't get to be in the picture, but it was certainly a great race to be in.
Ollie, you're on Mannerism. You just won the Caulfield Cup on her, and you're up on the inside. Were you aware of the commotion that was going on around you?
Yeah, there was a few funny stories behind that. I was actually riding. I was meant to ride Super until I won the Caulfield Cup on Mannerism, and then they decided to back Mannerism up in the Cox Plate. So I had to stay with Mannerism, and I remember Mick was in the box seat and I was behind him three pairs back the fence on Mannerism. Mick shifted off the fence and I went up inside him, and the next minute Mick fell. So that was just going around the turn. But actually going further back than that, because Naturalism was a short price favourite, and I remember Mick saying in the jockey's room, the only way this thing can get beat is if I get stuck behind Hutchie. and sure enough,
Hutchie, sure enough, he did.
Hutchie went down at the 700 or whatever it was, and anyway, Mick shifted out. I went up inside Mick, but fortunately, saved me because I didn't fall. Hutchie went down. Mick went straight over the top of him, couldn't miss him, and then I think Citizen Nifty Wilson was behind him, went over him too. But it was such a memorable race. It was just jam-packed. Even after the fall, I think Mannerism's feet didn't touch the ground coming around the home turn. I felt like I was getting carried around the turn. And then Super and Let's Elope came around the outside, and Greg Childs lost his rein or something, and she ducked in and cleaned everyone up, and Better Loosen Up got knocked down as well, and then Super just sailed down the outside and nailed them all. So there was so much happening in that race.
Down the outside, Superimpose, Let's Elope in the middle, Prince Salieri getting a run, Better Loosen Up and Superimpose, Let's Elope in front, Superimpose driving, Super, I think Super and Nose to Let's Elope on the Cox Plate.
The horses in that race, just legends, all of them. Hey, Bossy, do you remember watching that 92 Cox Plate?
I do, actually. Yeah, I do remember that thing with the carnage, but it was a spectacle, you know. Like, it was... And that's what this race does. It's you go out there completely expecting the unexpected most times. When you ride in this race, you do your form, but you basically, you know, it's not going to really help you much. You just go out there with your eyes wide open, your senses completely alive, and... just you completely ablib as you go. It's just one of them races. It's it just throws up so many different scenarios. It's what a joy to ride in.
Bossy and Pumper won this great race on horses that are remembered as champions. And Ollie, your time came to win this great race on a champion in 2001, a horse called Northerly, who had a spring carnival that was phenomenal that year. And it was a bit like musical chairs because it was... Greg Childs didn't know which one to choose because he was in love with the Mighty Sunline, and then he had the champ from the West. And if you were betting in the run here behind Sunline, you'd say Northerly's 100-1 there. What was going through your mind?
Yeah, you're right. Well, Greg rode Northerly early, but he'd also had a great association with Sunline, so you kind of felt that he was always going to stick with Sunline. She was going for a third Cox Plate, and the opportunity came up for me to ride Northerly, who, as you said, had a great spring carnival. He's a dominant weight for age horse of that spring, but he did have a habit of laying in, and he was a bit of an awkward ride. I mean, he's one of the most good horses, give you a good feel. He was a strange horse. He was a narrow neck, had an awkward action, and he just didn't give you the feel of a good horse. And as you see, he was the first off the bit, but he was always the last one standing. And the more pressure was in a race, the better it suited him. And having ridden in the two previous Cox Plates that Greg dominated on Sunline, I knew how he used to ride. He'd get around that bottom turn and then he just let her slide. And I knew he'd do it again because that's just how he rode her. And I just knew it would come in play in Northerly's hands. And when he took off, I knew Northerly come off the bit. I'd switch it to the left, and there was no whip restrictions in those days, thank God, because I think it might have been a few... he mightn't have won quite so many races. And we had Viscount, obviously, in between us in the run to the line, but... He got in a little bit, but I didn't think it was anything that was going to change the result of the race. Actually, Sunline got out more onto us, but you never want to go through a protest in a big race. And, fortunately, he was good enough to win it, and obviously he went on to win the next one as well.
Northerly after Sunline, down the outside from Viscount. Sunline the leader, Northerly on the outside, and Viscount coming at her. Sunline in front, Northerly the outside, going to Sunline. They got very tight, but Northerly wins the Cox Plate. A half length to Sunline.
He was a freak, wasn't he? He'd be up there with some of the best you've ever ridden in your top five, would he be?
Yeah, for sure. His record says that. And but as I said, it was strange because he never gave you the feel of a good horse, which as a jockey is that's the thing that sets other good horses apart from average ones, the feel they give you, you know, that explosive acceleration when you ask them to go. And he kind of never had that, but he had the record and the toughness and just, you know, if you got in a dogfight with a horse, he was one that you wanted to be on because they could get to him, but horses struggled to get past him.
You've been part of so many great memories. I want to go back to arguably the greatest Cox Plate I think that's ever been run, and that was probably because of Bill Collins' call. It was the Bone Crusher R. Waverley Star Cox Plate. We'll have a listen to the call 100%, then I want to ask you, gents, what you think.
Here come the New Zealanders, our Waverley Star and Bone Crusher. They've raced to the lead. 600 out. Have they gone too early? Two lengths to Drought running up the third from Society Bay. They were followed then by Drawn Under the Whip at the head of the others, Dinky Fire. But our Waverley Star, he got a half length of Bone Crusher. He's gone for the whip on Bone Crusher. Three lengths to Drought, followed then by Dinky Fire and Drawn. But the two great New Zealanders have come away on the turn. Our Waverley Star, a half-length Bone Crusher. The Big Red won't give in. Drought running on. Bone Crusher responds to the whip. The roars of the crowd. He races up to our Waverley Star. 100 out. Bone Crusher, our Waverley Star. Stride for stride. Nothing in it. Our Waverley Star, the rails. Bone Crusher, the outside. And Bone Crusher races into equine immortality. $1.5 million as he photo finishes our Waverley Star. Third is the Filbert, followed by...
It still brings the hairs up on the back of the neck, doesn't it? Just listening to that call and watching that unbelievable vision. And it was the Kiwi Champs Pumper. They ran 1-2-3, actually, with the Filbert running third. But do you remember, were you over in New Zealand watching the Kiwis dominate the Cox Plate, or were you here?
I was here watching it.
Were you?
And, look, credit to both jockeys. To take off and do what they'd done in the Cox Plate was amazing. I think everyone sort of went, well, these blokes are going mad, these two Kiwis. But to do what they've done so far from home and battle it out right to the line, both horses were under the stick coming to the corner because they'd really set them a task. But it showed their brilliance and to say Bone Crusher, he was a champion racehorse, like to dig that deep and now Waverley Star.
So, Jimmy, just were they the two favourites? And would you think Gary Stewart would have been thinking, it's not the only one I've got to beat. If I take off with it now, I'll be right? Or what do you think?
Well, Dave O'Sullivan was such a great trainer in New Zealand, and he brought some great horses here to race. I think Shivery running a Cox Plate, Roger Lang, he got beat. But and Bone Crusher I knew because I'd ridden him in New Zealand prior to him coming to Australia, and he was like Northerly. He would just keep coming. He wouldn't lay down. And for them two jockeys to do that, as three of us know, take the ball into your own court, 1,000 from home in the WS Cox Plate, like, you've got to stand up and be counted. If you're under pressure on the corner and you run a good third or fourth, the great media are going to crucify you. But it was amazing that they were able to fight it out right to the line. It was amazing.
It was one of the greatest races. Hey, boys, we're out of time. I could sit here and talk to you all night. But I'm going to ask you one last question each. Who would you ride this year, Bossy?
Wow. Okay. I'd like to ride Juez. I think she's just got the weapons. I think, yeah, I'd like her. I think her run the other day, first up over 7 furlongs, was pretty good. Yeah, I think she's going to be a major force in all the three cups this year. So, yeah, if you put a gun to my head right now, I'd say she's the one I'd like to ride.
Pumper?
Might and Power or Winx?
I'm glad we mentioned the Mighty Man, Winx. We couldn't not mention the Mighty Man. Ollie, who will you ride this year?
I'm hoping it's Animo. But we'll see how he goes. There's a bit of water to pass under the bridge yet. But, yeah, I've always had a lot of time for the horse. Won the Guineas on him last spring. And I think he's just hitting his straps now. You know, I won his first start on him as a two-year-old in the Merson Cooper at Sandown, where he came from. They don't usually win from there. And he's always just felt like the older and more mature he's going to get, the better he's going to get. So he's the one I want to be riding.
That was one of my claim to fame, Ollie. Rachel King rode him in the slipper. I said, if you have luck, he'll win. If he gets beaten in the slipper, I said he'll win the Caulfield Guineas. So he's the horse I'd love to be on.
All right. Well, many people say he should have won it last year, so it could be redemption.
I think he should have. I was on him. I was allowed a bet then.
Oh, please. Then. Pumper.
First official bet.
First bet in your life. Yes, exactly.
Like that, didn't you?
Hey? Ladies and gentlemen, more than 300 Group 1 winners between them, including 7 Cox Plates. Put your hands together for Glenn
Thank
Boss,
you. Thank you.
Jim Cassidy and Damien Oliver. Thank you, gents.
Thanks, Mike.
Cheers. Thanks, Pumper. Thanks, Bossy. Cheers.